It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Life begins at conception.
We march for life.
We're marching to end abortion.
Je viens de Belgique et je supporte la marche pour la vie.
Because I regret my abortion and I want to help.
I march for all those who can't because life is beautiful.
Just because life begins doesn't mean that these children have a voice. So someone has to speak for them, so that's why we're here.
So that all children are given that same opportunity to live life to their fullest.
Because all babies are precious.
Every child deserves a life, and that's why I'm marching.
Love is life.
Life is worth fighting for, and that's why I'm here.
And we march to change the narrative on women's health care.
Look how many people are here that will support you, support me, and you're saving children.
And I'm so happy to be a part of this beautiful movement. It's something that everyone should be a part of, just celebrating life.
Sandy Rios with you, and this is the 46th year anniversary of that Supreme Court decision known as Roe versus Wade. It just seems like only yesterday that I was in Berlin, Germany, in an office just looking for a piece of paper when I opened a drawer and saw the first brochure I had ever seen in my lifetime illustrating abortion. It was not long after Roe versus Wade was signed, and I had no idea when the knife went through my heart as I saw that photo of a dismembered baby that what God would call me to be actually in a position to maybe stop the whole wretched deal. We've come a long way. We have stopped abortions in the United States, at least some, not stopped them, but we have slowed them down. We've shut down many clinics. We've stopped a lot of abortion doctors. But we are not there yet, and certainly with the change in political leadership in the nation's capital, we're going to have to fight for every single thing, and we will no doubt lose ground. But today, we look at the landscape. We know that LifeSite News just reported, I think last week, that 42 million people worldwide were killed through abortion in 2018. The Breitbart News actually said that that was in contrast to 8.2 million people who died from cancer, 5 million from smoking, and 1.7 from HIV/AIDS. So more people died of abortion than those three things. We also know that in the United States, just about under a million babies are aborted each year, but it's still the leading cause of death in the United States. It is a shameful, shameful badge that we wear, and that Western civilization, European countries, we are the propagators of this dastardly practice of killing our unborn children. Well, our next guest has spent really much of his life, his young life, I would say, you know, fighting this. And particularly, he is an expert on the effect on the Black and minority communities, which is targeted by so many abortion clinics, especially Planned Parenthood. His name is Ryan Bomberger. He is an Emmy Award-winning creative professional. He founded what's called the Radiance Foundation, which is a life-affirming 501c3, along with his wife, Bethany. He's a broadcast media designer, producer, columnist. He also is the author of a powerful book called Not Equal, Civil Rights Gone Wrong. He has briefed Congress. He's launched billboard campaigns. He's done so many things to try to save lives. In other words, he's put his money where his mouth is, and he joins us today. Ryan Bomberger, thanks for joining us, Ryan.
It's great to be here with you, Sandy.
Hey, Ryan, I know you're going to be involved in the March for Life, which is taking place today in the nation's capital, which is one of my favorite events in Washington. I love it. I attend as often as I can. What are you doing today?
We're getting ready to actually go for the next few days and all the things that the March for Life entails. A lot of people think it's just a march, but there are all kinds of educational seminars and classes. There's a lot going on. We hold a prayer and worship event tomorrow night, the night before the March for Life, in the main hotel called One Voice DC. And so there's a lot. So we're getting ready to go, even though it's just snowed and all that craziness. But we're pro-lifers. We go through all kinds of weather.
You know what? So I always ask people when I talk to them, Ryan, and you're no exception, when they have an expertise on something, there's generally a reason. I told you just a few minutes ago what really started my passion on the issue of life. It was like a knife in my heart as a young woman when I looked at those pictures. So I'm wondering, for you as a young Black man, why in the world this issue? What was that thing that drove you to this?
My own story. My birth mom experienced the horror and the violence of rape and yet chose not only life, but gave me the incredible gift of adoption. So I grew up in a small little family of 15. I have six brothers and six sisters, and 10 of us were adopted. We're white, we're Black, we're white and Black, we're Native American, Vietnamese, just a mixture. I mean, our family is a portrait of diversity, but the thing that I learned in that huge family with so many different backgrounds is that we are truly one human race. So I would say it's my own story that got me to be so passionate about defending human life regardless of circumstances of conception.
Ryan, you're also Christian, as I am too. And so how did that happen? Was your family, your adoptive parents, were they serious Christ followers, and you heard that growing up? Is that how that happened?
Absolutely. My parents, Henry and Andrea Bomberger, love Jesus, and out of that love for Christ is the love for people. Obviously, you kind of have to love people if you're going to have 13 kids, I'm just saying, and survive 13 teenagers. So my parents and their faith and the same faith that I share absolutely is the strongest motivator for defending those made in his image.
Radiance Foundation, I just sort of globbed over that, but I think it would be really interesting for people to know the kinds of things that you have done, Ryan. And I remember, you don't have to remember this, but I remember meeting you because I remember your hair, I remember your appearance, I remember your personality. We had a brief exchange, I think, at the March for Life, maybe last year, maybe 2 years ago. And I remember thinking, I've got to interview that young man, but I never did. Maybe I lost your card. That's probably the story. But I want to know what you've actually done with all of your creative gifts. What have you been doing?
Well, my wife and I started the Radiance Foundation a few years ago because we wanted to tackle the tough issues that we felt Christians were not engaging in. So my wife is an educator by profession, 13 years as a teacher, and I worked as creative director for 13 years. And what we do is we tackle these tough issues all in the context of God-given purpose. So we take on, of course, the issue of abortion, talk about adoption, fatherlessness, poverty, free speech, religious liberty, and creatively illuminate that life as purpose. So if you go to radiance.life, you can see we do 60 keynote events around the world, multimedia keynote events. We do fearless journalism. We're not afraid to take on the fake news establishment. We have our own compassionate community outreaches, and we do ad campaigns as well to tackle some of these issues. So all those things in the context of God-given purpose.
You know, I remember this in Ohio. I want to give this example because I think this is great. I think I actually saw these driving through. So around Cleveland in early 2018, suddenly these billboards came alive, and they said things like, abortion is sacred. Abortion is a family value. Abortion is a blessing. They also said, abortion saved my career. Abortion saved my future. Abortion saved my children. So, Ryan, you saw that, as I did, but you did something about it. What did you do?
I responded the only way I could. Had to get the truth out there. And so we worked with an incredible coalition of pro-life organizations, even activists that normally you wouldn't think would be on our side, but from the Al Sharpton's National Action Network and the chair of the Women of NAACP, they joined us in a campaign called WhatAbortionReallyIs.com. And so we placed billboards in the same Cleveland area saying things like, abortion is lost fatherhood, abortion is violence, abortion is systemic racism. So we placed about 10 billboards in that area to combat preterm, that's Ohio's largest abortion facility, to combat their campaign that was targeted primarily toward African Americans. 9 of the 16 billboards were placed in predominantly 80% or more African American neighborhoods.
Yeah, well, of course, because that's what Planned Parenthood does. As you well know, they target minority communities, and we could go on the sidebar that recounts the story of eugenicist Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, who they still proudly claim as their founder, who wanted to see minority people extinguished, killed, like she referred to them as human weeds. And so it's just really stunning that they still get away with that. Ryan, I suspect, I don't know you well, we're just getting acquainted here, but I suspect that you probably, like me, look at the world really in a colorblind way, that people are people, that God calls all of us, that we are bad and we are good, has nothing to do with color. We come in all shapes and sizes. And so when it comes to abortion, you know, it's not a litmus test for color, but it is true that the black community is being targeted because of racism. So would you say that you spend your time focusing your energies and the case that you make to minorities or not?
We do address the entire public, but we were the first organization, for instance, to launch a public ad campaign dealing with the hugely disproportionate impact of abortion in the black community, and that was our TooManyAborted.com campaign. I mean, you're talking about abortion rates that are up to 5 times higher in the city where Planned Parenthood was spawned in that eugenic racism and elitism. More black babies, for the past 10 years, more black babies have been aborted than born alive. In 2014, the last year where we have national stats, for every 1,000 born alive, about 1,039 have been aborted. And so we've been highlighting this. What Fannie Lou Hamer, the famed anti-poverty activist, the voting rights activist, she called genocide in the black community. And so we've been highlighting this, working with civil rights leaders like Dr. Alveda King, and trying to awaken black churches, especially who led during the civil rights era. Why are you not leading now? There is a decimation that is happening. And so we do address that issue, but we do, as an organization through the Radiance Foundation, do address abortion's impact on our entire society.
You know, it's funny. I just was reflecting. Joe Scheidler, who founded the Pro-Life Action League, is a very dear friend of mine. And I remember discussions a few decades ago with Joe on the abortion slavery connection. And the similarities, he's written extensively about that, and it is really true. From the very roots of it is the worst kinds of racism. It is just unspeakable. This is really racism. This is racism. The other stuff we're calling racism, like, you know, healthcare issues, is not. It's not a serious discussion. But Ryan, I want to ask you, if you were to grade the involvement of young black Americans on this issue and black churches, which would be two different scores, I suppose, what would you say that what the status is in terms of how they fight back? I'm talking about black youth in general, regardless of their religious status, and I'm talking about black churches, which are distinctly Christian.
Well, there is definitely a divide there, because you have a lot more millennials who are kind of disregarding or leaving the church and not embracing those same ideals. However, interestingly, what is similar is that you have the embrace by young millennials through the Black Lives Matter movement, for instance, which is radically pro-abortion, radically anti-fatherhood, and radically anti-Christian in so many ways, which is actually doing the same thing that many black churches are. Many black churches stand with Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood has worked for decades to develop allies in the black church. They understood that the best way to influence the black community was through black pastors, and they've never given up on that. And so in some ways, it's very similar. In other ways, I am encouraged, because there are black pastors and black bishops who are awakening. In fact, the Kojic Church, the Church of God in Christ, just in the last several years has made a declaration that it is a pro-life church, that it removed the curriculum that was being taught to its younger people in its Sunday schools, which was developed by the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. They weren't even aware of it. It's radically pro-abortion. So yeah. I'm encouraged.
Yeah. Ryan, hold that thought.
There are changes happening.
Hold that thought. Ryan Baumberger is our guest, and his organization is called Radiance Foundation. And this is the 46th anniversary, dreadful anniversary of Roe versus Wade. And when we return, lots to talk about with Ryan. He recently spoke at Wheaton College, and that's one thing we want to get into, and it's not a good story. So stay with me. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
take a minute here and imagine if your right to life was quickly snatched. All of your purpose, goals, and aspirations trapped inside of a shell never to be hatched, yet scratched, itched. We were hand-stitched by God, God's DNA in us at the very moment of fertilization. Even if you're a twin, there are no two just alike, no duplications. No fingerprint on earth, past, present, and future is like ours. You're beyond fascination. There is none like you. You are different, peculiar, unique, distinct. Now imagine if all of who you are and what you're to become is suddenly extinct. You existed for a while, but now abruptly aborted. God's clear frequency of love sent through man, conceived by woman, yet mankind distorted. 60 million unborn babies aborted since Roe versus Wade. 60 million cures for diseases that could have been made. 60 million ideas of light to invade this dark world shade. 60 million songs of love and life that will never be played. 60 million hearts cut by death's spades. Made in the image of God, we were meant to be fruitful and to multiply. Instead, we subtract, divide, and fractionalize, choosing who has the right to live and rise. While 67 to 90% of preborn babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are chosen to die. The screams of our unborn seeds can be heard if we stopped to listen.
Sandy Rios with you. It is the 46th year anniversary of Roe v. Wade. The March for Life in Washington, D.C. is taking place today, midday. And that's the promo video that they prepared called Imagine. Thousands and thousands of people will be descending on Washington, D.C. It is really the most exciting event. If some of you can jump in the car, those of you in Virginia and the surrounding areas, and go today, you will not be sorry, because it really is an exciting event. Ryan Bomberger is my guest today. He's the founder of the Radiance Foundation. If you just joined us, Ryan is black. He was raised by adoptive family. His life came as a result of a violent rape. He has quite a story, and he has spent his life, along with his wife, trying to tell the truth about what abortion is. It is racist. It targets minority communities, but it also is just plain murder. It's an evil that stretches across racial lines. So Ryan is out all the time talking to various people, various platforms about the sanctity of human life. And he was recently invited to Wheaton College. Now, let me give a little background. Wheaton College is located in the suburbs of Chicago. Actually, I'm from Wheaton. I raised my children in Wheaton. My son is a graduate of Wheaton. So as I tell you this story, I have very personal ties and feelings about what we're going to talk about here. Wheaton was, the alma mater of Billy Graham and Ruth Graham. It was founded by two men who were very involved in the Underground Railroad. Wheaton has been a conservative, solid. It's known as the Harvard of evangelical secondary education. And so Ryan was invited to speak there, and so I'm going to turn it to him. Ryan, the title of your message there was Black Lives Matter in and out of the womb. So that could be a lot of different things. What was the gist of your message?
Well, I was invited by courageous students in the College Republican group there to address race and abortion. And so Black Lives Matter in and out of the womb was a multimedia presentation on the hugely disproportionate impact of abortion in the black community and calling out the Black Lives Matter movement for being radically pro-abortion and partnering with Planned Parenthood. So that was the gist of the presentation.
So they knew that you were going to talk about Black Lives Matter very openly and critically.
Yes, but apparently I, as a black person, or at least someone who's as black as Obama, am not allowed to use the words Black Lives Matter, according to some students, staff, and faculty there.
Yeah, well, you know what? That reminds me. I'm sorry, I'm going to get off subject for a second. It reminds me of, I can't remember his name, but he's a black commentator for Fox. And he was being interviewed on a radio interview, and the black female accused him of being immune to what she was talking about because of his white privilege. And, you know, I'm sure you heard this. It happened in the last few days. And he goes, white well, what white privilege? What are you talking about? How do I have white privilege? And then she waxes eloquent about how he couldn't possibly understand the plight of the black community, and all he had succeeded in doing had to do with his white privilege. And then he said, "You have obviously been very badly prepared because I'm black." So I think it's a little bit the same but different. I want to know who was your audience that night?
The audience was a packed out auditorium of all kinds of students, white, black, and every hue in between. So it was mostly students. I didn't see a whole lot of faculty or people who looked like they could be old enough to be faculty, maybe two or three. And the dean of student development actually attended the event and praised me, by the way, immediately after the event for how I handled everything. He apparently changed his tune the next day.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. But let me ask, okay, what was the response like from your, I mean, listen, I speak a lot, so you kind of get a read for the audience. You've got a pretty good idea of how it went. So how do you think it went?
It was a very sedate audience, and it actually kind of struck me as odd at first. I mean, here I'm at a college that claims to be pro-life, at least on its website and its covenant, and yet there was so little energy and so little life. That struck me because I speak to so many different audiences and a lot of animated audiences. So it was a very quiet audience, but there were many who were listening intently. Everybody was very polite. It wasn't until after the Q&A that things got heated, but it seemed that it was well received. It was in the post Q&A though that I realized that there was a lot of hostility for the things that I was espousing. For instance, that I would claim, you know, out of Acts 17:26, we are created from one blood. We are one human race. And so I was encouraging people to love one another and not assume they know the next person simply because of the hue of their skin. But apparently that didn't go over well.
Okay, let's paint that. I know you've talked about this a lot, and it's not a new... November? This is November that you were there. So little
Correct.
Time has November elapsed. 14th. So let me go back and pick your brain a little bit more to paint the picture. So you, this is the way it goes when you're a speaker. You do a Q&A, but then when you step down, people want to talk to you. And you, out of courtesy, most of us were certainly happy to do that. So you had like 25 or so students, right?
Correct.
And
there were
they
and several staff members.
Okay, so were they white or black or both?
They were all black except for two who were possibly Hispanic or maybe even Native American. I'm not sure exactly the ethnicity, but
okay.
They were almost all black.
All minority. Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. All right. So what, so the one human race thing, that was the main source of contention?
It was in contention because they had asked me about white privilege. And what I was saying was we have to be careful about assuming that someone has privilege simply because of the hue of their skin. I said, the best way to approach this, and tying it back to what I said at the beginning of the presentation, is that we're one human race, that we cannot assume we know somebody because of the hue of their skin. You can't know their history. And I gave the example of my mom. You could know that she had an alcoholic father and grew up in a trailer park and understand any of her background or any of the brokenness, but yet people would look at her and assume privilege because she was white. And so they didn't like that in the context that I didn't embrace this whole ideology of white privilege and the need for white guilt. There were a number of other things. One of the students was saying that whites should be guilty and pay for their corporal sin. I said, aren't we all fallen? Doesn't Scripture say that we've all fallen short of the glory of God? Aren't we all responsible for corporal sin? And he gave me the example of slavery. And he said, well, what about white abolitionists? Should they be held accountable? Should their descendants be held accountable? And so I was challenging them with questions, with rhetoric apparently that they're hearing in classes or hearing from some other sources, but that were not grounded in truth whatsoever.
At any time, did you feel that you lost your temper?
No. Well, first of all, anybody who's ever heard me speak, I'm kind of mild, man. I mean, I love to joke around, I love to be funny, but I can guarantee you there wouldn't be one person who, and I've spoken to tens of thousands of people, who would ever say that I've been unkind or mean to anyone. So that's why part of this whole thing, they're trying to say that after the recording went off, I became a completely different person. It's just completely untrue. It's a lie. I'm always trying to deal with things very delicately because I understand that, especially when you deal with the issue of abortion, there's brokenness. So that's how they're trying to cast me. They're trying to cast me as someone who made students cry and didn't care and was just somebody that I clearly am not. And anybody who was there, the College Republican group was all still there during this whole time, and they could easily attest to the fact that I dealt with it calmly, which is why the Dean of Student Development, Steve Ivester, at Wheaton College, came up to me and he congratulated me for the way that I dealt with very sensitive material in a very grace-filled way.
But you didn't get that in recording either, did you? All right, now
no,
let me
didn't
just
get that in the recording.
You didn't go around recording conversations. Okay, so this is an off-the-record conversation that happened spontaneously after your speech and after the Q&A, and then an email goes out from the student activities office. So this is a student-wide email, right? Ryan?
Yes, nearly 2,500 students, every student on campus.
Okay, and so it says, Wheaton Community, as many of you know, a special interest club hosted an event on Wednesday night titled Black Lives Matter, In and Outside the Womb. The speaker of this event, Ryan Bomberger, made several comments at the event that deeply troubled members of our community. His comments surrounding the topic of race made many students, staff, and faculty of color feel unheard, underrepresented, and unsafe on our campus. And it goes on to say that the student government were committed to the college's mission, which pursues unity, embraces ethnic diversity, and practices racial reconciliation so that it will contribute to the education of whole persons. And anyway, it goes on to, we also look to recognize and challenge any situations that may hinder this mission. So you took issue with this. Ryan, what bothered you the most about this?
To even suggest that I made students, staff, and faculty of color feel unsafe on campus, what does that even mean? That's insane. I mean, if truth makes them feel unsafe, that's a problem. Then there's something wrong with the Christian education. If truth spoken in love and spoke with a biblical perspective and with grace makes someone feel unsafe, then they have a bigger problem than me coming to campus and talking about race and abortion. The fact that entire letter denounced me, denounced the presentation, it dismissed the entire presentation, didn't say anything good about any part of the presentation. But the fact that they're saying that students, staff, and faculty felt unheard and underrepresented, how can you be unheard in a presentation that's about black individuals, presented by a black individual who then holds 30 minutes of a Q&A, and then another 30 minutes of a post-discussion Q&A. I mean, the accusations are just, keep in mind, the three student leaders that signed it, only one of them attended, and the two Wheaton staff officials who helped to write, approve, and send out this email were also not in attendance at the event.
So one person out of the five were present who claimed that you made them uncomfortable. I also read that you made them cry, that they were very upset and weeping. You say that, I mean, did that happen?
Not at all. I mean, this is one of the students, we were having kind of a calm interchange, and another student just blasted out about how he was afraid to come out of his home because of the KKK. They left flyers in their neighborhood, and his parents wouldn't let him go outside Halloween night. And he exploded in this anger, which for me seemed like it came out of nowhere. And he's crying and upset. And I was trying to calm him down, trying to understand what he was talking about. And at the end of it, I said, I'm sorry that you felt afraid to come out of your house because of leaflets from the KKK. But let's remember, the KKK today is nothing like the KKK it used to be. Today, it's more like a clown outfit organization. It does not have the power that it used to have. I said, there are far greater things threatening the black community today than today's KKK. That is one of the things that they could not accept that I would say. I mean, I write about the KKK, I denounce them, but the whole presentation was about something that's a far greater threat. Abortion is a far greater threat to the black community today than the KKK is today. Fatherlessness, failing schools. My wife was a teacher in public schools for years, her last 3 years in inner city Philly. Let me guarantee you, she would agree that there are far worse things facing the black community today than a powerless KKK.
Yes. Well, you won't get any arguments from me because, of course, the KKK and the white supremacists and people on the right who are allegedly such a threat right now, you could count them, you know, almost on one hand. It is really a very small, tiny group of people who would embrace such ideology left in this country. That is absolutely a fact. We can prove it by the numbers. But I want to go back to this, because in this student-wide email that claimed that you had made them feel unsafe and made them feel unheard and underrepresented, I want to go back to this statement, because they quote the Wheaton College's mission. Wheaton College, this great evangelical, the Harvard of Christian colleges for many years, has produced so many fine graduates. And their statement of purpose is to pursue unity, embrace ethnic diversity, and practice racial reconciliation, which brings to mind another speech by an African-American that took place 1 year before Ryan's. His name is Dr. George Yancey from Emory University. Keeping in mind that statement of intent on Wheaton College's part, when we return, we'll turn our attention to what Dr. George Yancey actually had to say on campus, because I think you'll find it interesting. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is white privilege continues to exist. White privilege, white power. We don't have that. Black bodies have never had that. We've always encountered white racism. There's nothing called black racism. Perhaps we need more spaces where white spaces, probably white spaces, break down. And what does that look like when they break down? So like the elevator, spaces where we get to dwell near each other, where you get to see that you are the problem. How do we here within this space, within this at Wheaton College, experience breakdown? For the most part, white people are not in crisis. I would like to see what it means for white people to be in crisis over their white supremacy or over their whiteness. They believe that they're not racists. But once again, I pose the question, what if to be white in America is to be racist? I desire to see white people in massive droves lay down the armory of white privilege and tear apart. I would like to see them in crisis.
Okay, so that's Dr. George Yancey. Who is he? He is he's a philosophy professor at Emory University, and so he was brought in to speak on Wheaton College campus to students a year ago. I'm going to give you some other examples of the things he said. He said, given the history of white supremacy, we ought to be the ones who fear white people. I mean blank. If you're black, you should be scared as blank here at Wheaton College. He also said that in the end, white people are the N-word. That got zero pushback. Okay, so then he says, to be white is to be racist. He said many other things, which we're going to get into. He said, it's not about leaving white people with hope. That's not my job. White America sees me as a N. White America sees you, if you're black, as an N. And I don't want you to forget that. That was Dr. George Yancey who spoke on Wheaton College's campus. And let me add again that according to the student government, Wheaton College's mission is to pursue unity, embrace ethnic diversity, and practice racial reconciliation. And so I turned to Ryan Bomberger. Ryan, you were the one who pointed this out. How did you know Dr. George Yancey came and spoke and said those vile things?
Because students, after my presentation, had discussed that event, and because they were shocked at some of the hostility that some of the students after the Q&A were showing me, and so they shared with me the speaker that came prior, and they said, yes, it was an expletive-laced presentation, but the school never pushed back on him at all. So here, after I get the letter of denouncement from the two Wheaton officials and three student government leaders, I'm wondering, wait a minute. We just recently got a copy of this audio from George Yancey, Dr. Yancey, and I thought, I understand now why in that letter that they say students, staff, and faculty of color felt unsafe on campus. Well, if you have a speaker coming to campus and saying that you need to be scared as if you're blank. A black student, you need to be, can I say it?
No, don't say it. Just the
okay,
blank.
I won't say it, but you need to be, yeah. You need to be scared. If you're black on campus at Wheaton, you need to be scared. Well, they're just fulfilling the words of Dr. Yancey. And so my question is, how is it that the student government didn't represent the majority of students who were undeniably offended by this, not just students, but faculty as well? So there was no student letter. There was no public denouncement of Dr. Yancey, but they were quick within 6 days to denounce someone who actually called for racial reconciliation, for someone who actually gave a biblical perspective and talked about forgiveness and talked about grace and talked about love, none of which Dr. Yancey ever addressed. His thing is just the result of bitterness and unforgiveness.
Ryan, I listened to the entire 16-minute, at least, clips of him talking, or portion of his speech, and it wasn't just that Dr. George Yancey is obviously a racist. It wasn't just that. It was his vulgarity, and it wasn't just him quoting people. Yes, he quoted people using their vulgarity, claiming that people were calling him unbelievable names. And by the way, could I just say, Ryan, I bet this is true of you, too. If I read my inbox, my Twitter account, on the air, your ears would blow back too, because I get
exactly.
That stuff too. I'm white. I know that.
Time.
So it doesn't matter. So he read all of that stuff without editing. But that wasn't just it. It was his own words. He goes on to describe the envy of white men to black men, the anatomy. I mean, it was the most vulgar display. As a mother of a former Wheaton College student and of that being my home turf, I sang at the dedication of the Billy Graham Center, by the way, when it was dedicated, and I'm sickened by what they allowed. And I want to go back to, this is LaTanya Taylor. She's the director of media relations at Wheaton College, and she was responding to our news department, AFR News, that reached out to Wheaton for their take on this. And she said, she said a lot of things. Outside of the chapel setting, where we only invite speakers who are fully committed to Wheaton's evangelical statement of faith, we host many speakers who may or may not agree with the statement of faith and community covenant. This is because we are not trying to protect our students from the outside world, but rather to provide them with opportunities to engage it as discerning believers. Wheaton College welcomes challenging ideas and sees them as an important part of the learning process within an environment of care and respect for all of our students. All right, I just want, before I jump in, as I would love to, I want to know what your response to that would be, Ryan, to parents of students at Wheaton or to Wheaton itself, in regard to George Yancey.
There's a difference between challenging ideas and pure venom. What Dr. Yancey was delivering was pure venom, and it's not like they couldn't have known, because there was a speech posted a year prior that he pretty much gave the identical speech at another university that was available on YouTube. So the philosophy department easily could have known, unless they don't use the internet. So for them to say they want students to hear different ideas, I'm all about different ideas. But if you have something that's so clearly anti-biblical, that's so clearly racist, why invite them? Would they invite David Duke? Would they invite Louis Farrakhan to speak in the Billy Graham Center? They offer challenging and different ideas, don't they?
Yes, and I would even take that further. That was my question, Ryan. If I were to respond to LaTanya, I'd say, so I'm curious about where the line is. Are we going to have a transgender man come in and talk about the beauties of transgenderism? And are we going to have a polyamorous come in and talk about the beauties of having more than one wife or husband? Because those are challenging ideas, and that's, you know, we're educating our kids. But even more than that, are we going to allow someone to show pornography? Because that's a different viewpoint, too. Because as far as I'm concerned, what Dr. George Yancey was honestly bordered on, I know maybe this is overstating, I don't think so, but his graphic use of and description was almost pornographic to me. So I am repelled by it. So they are bent out of shape over your presentation, but they're not so upset about Dr. George Yancey. So you wrote about this, and then you've gotten some blowback, Ryan, since then. So what's happened?
So apparently Ed Stetzer, who is the director of the Billy Graham Center, was upset. Now, keep in mind, the Wheaton leadership never had a conversation with us. We reached out. The Radiance Foundation reached out to Wheaton leadership over and over and over again, and at the last second, they canceled our phone conference. We tried to talk through this. We want to work things out for the college Republicans who have had experience literally persecution on campus because of all the false narratives that have now spread as a result of all of this. Wheaton Leadership has not talked to us. Ed Stetzer has never contacted me, but instead has now published two articles denouncing me. But once again, he denounces me with this nebulous, unnamed allegations of things that I've said, which, for me, it's such a poor reflection of a great institution. There are a lot of incredible professors there at Wheaton who are, you know, faithful to Scripture. Unfortunately, Wheaton Leadership has chosen to avoid acting with integrity. So he basically just publishes a hit piece on me talking about how this is merely just a dispute. It's a disagreement between students and me. It's not about a disagreement. It's about lies being told by some of the students who oppose my presentation and the Wheaton leadership that's allowing these lies to just fester. And to have a director of the Billy Graham Center, who has no excuse for bringing in somebody like a Dr. George Yancey into that sacred space, if you will, for him to continue to spread these unnamed allegations is just reckless and irresponsible. And it's very disappointing as a fellow evangelical Christian to see this kind of behavior from such an institution.
Now, I have Ed Stetzer's first article, again, the head of the Billy Graham Association. The Billy Graham Center, sorry, very different. Billy Graham Center at Wheaton, on the campus of Wheaton College. He says Bomberger indicated in his columns that he wanted a Matthew sort of conflict resolution approach to this, but that's not how public dialogue and disagreement works. Matthew 18 applies when you think I've sinned. If I've disagreed with you, even a manner that you find questionable, that's called public disagreement. Disagreement is part of public dialogue. If I've sinned against you, call me. No one sinned against Bomberger. Some students disagreed with him. I'd like to hear your response to that, Ryan.
Well, apparently Ed Stetzer forgets that slander is a sin. So when you say things that make claims that things came out of my mouth that were never said. For instance, one of the students said that in a presentation that I delivered that was about the systemic racism of the abortion industry, that I somehow said these words verbatim: racism doesn't exist anymore. That's what the student claimed. This and many other lies. Of course, how am I going to say that in a presentation about racism? Another student said that I said that no one cares about what the KKK believes anymore. Of course I didn't say that. The racism is putrid. It's a sin. Racism is a sin that we need to challenge. They just didn't like the fact that a black individual was saying, why are we embracing a secular movement like Black Lives Matter instead of having the church lead on issues of racial injustice? So for Ed Stetzer to say something like that, that it's no one sinned, well, lying is a sin, slander is a sin. And more importantly, to embrace a secular worldview. This is what's happening. They worship this deity of diversity, and I put that in quotes, over the divine. That's how you can bring in speakers like this to talk about race, because they embrace a black liberation theology viewpoint. That's really the problem. That's really the crux of all this, because a lot of these students were spewing James Cone, who developed this whole black liberation theology, spewing that ideology in those words. And Dr. Yancey, all of his speeches are, it's inextricable from all his speeches. In fact, he quotes James Cone over and over and over again. So there are much bigger issues that Ed Stetzer doesn't want to admit exist at Wheaton, and it's not a disagreement between students and me.
Yes, and another sad thing, and quickly, we need to mention this because I have to say, I, at this point, unless things, and this is not the only issue at Wheaton, I've covered other things, I'm so sad. I'm telling you, this makes me so sad to say this, but when we send our children off to colleges and universities, some of these evangelical colleges have become some of the most dangerous places. And so just be wise, all of you parents, just because it's your alum, because you graduated from a place, because it has a great name, is not a reason really now to consider a college or university. And I would also add that Wheaton College, to our knowledge, has not actually pushed the pro-life issue. Yes, they went to the Supreme Court to make sure that they didn't have to give a contraception, that they were exempted from giving contraception. So that was a pro-life issue they were front and center on. But actually, in terms of teaching and instructing and bringing in speakers who are pro-life as a college to instruct and motivate their kids to be involved, that That's not happening. And so that's just the way it is. Orion, well, how do you see this thing playing out? And I know that it's been hurtful to you personally, but there's more at stake than just you personally, isn't there?
It is. I'm concerned, as a father of four, two of my kiddos are adopted. I'm concerned about some of the students who are there on campus who are now, they've seen the curtain pull back on their leadership. And I will say that I am so proud, if I can use that word, of some of these students for standing courageously and not moving, holding their leadership accountable for unbiblical behavior. In fact, if I can just name two students, Philip Zeisimer and Michael McCraith, the co-founders of the College Republicans, they've really had to withstand a lot of attacks, their verbal attacks on campus, for their stand for bringing me in, and also for challenging the Wheaton leadership to actually do the right thing. Send out a campus-wide email and saying, hey, that was one perspective before. Here's what actually happened. Here's a link to the presentation. Come to your own reasoned conclusion about these things, which, of course, Wheaton leadership has not allowed them to do.
Ryan, we're running out of time. And also, you point out that they're both the president and vice president of the Republicans are Black and Hispanic. So that makes it rich. You know, that just shows you, does it not show you, that God is colorblind and he calls each of us in a different way. It has nothing to do with our color. And this emphasis on racist is in itself divisive. And so we have to stop it. And we certainly have to stop it on college campuses. And that's what Ryan's trying to do. Ryan Bomberger will put his article on our Facebook page so that you can read it and follow up. Ryan, God bless you and thank you for joining us.